ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Montana. A 72-year-old man was out picking huckleberries alone in the Flathead National Forest on Thursday evening, July 18th, when an adult female grizzly bear suddenly attacked him. The victim then shot and killed the grizzly bear with a handgun. The man, who lives near the site of the attack, was then helped to the hospital by a family member. A Montana Fish and Wildlife spokesperson told the Missoulian newspaper that the shooting was ruled to be in self-defense and no charges are pending. Services for the bear are pending at the First People's Meatpacking House. This has been the DGU, or Defensive Gun Use, Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
Years ago, this nation was conceived in liberty by a document that is still quoted today around the opinions are his, not necessarily. America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America, armed and free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
And indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free. Supposed to have Marty Hayes on of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network. Somehow or other, we crossed signals. I don't have his accurate phone number. So I am going to discuss a little bit about the necessity of legal defense insurance. And I will probably, in just a little bit, change topics if we don't get a hold of Marty at the first break. But in any case, the topic, the whole idea of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network and Mark Victor, attorneys on retainer, and what's the big one? The one out of Wisconsin by Tim Schmidt. I'm trying to think of the name of his organization, and I used to be a member of that. I now have Second Call Self-Defense, which is Sean Maloney's organization out of Ohio for their self-defense policy. His is insurance-based. Marty's is not. And that's what I was going to discuss with Marty at the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. It is vital that if you carry a gun in self-defense, you have some sort of a policy, not just your regular liability policy or your umbrella policy, but something that will actually pay for legal defense in the event that you get involved in a self-defense, either shooting or a use of force, a defensive display in which you end up taking a gun out of its holster. It's vital that you have coverage for that before the event occurs. I've had people hear the programs I've done on legal insurance and say, well, you know, if I get into trouble, I'll call them. No, you won't, because they're going to tell you too bad. because you don't buy insurance after the event. You get insurance if indeed what you have is insurance. Some people offer coverages that are not insurance. For instance, Mark Victor at Attorneys on Retainer has what you basically do is you're retaining an attorney and you're paying a monthly fee to keep an attorney on retainer of about $25 in the case of Mark Victor. Or with there are different levels of protection from about $12 a month to about $35 a month with various organizations that are in the business of providing coverage in the event you get involved in a self-defense incident. And the way it works is these organizations give you a membership card, and on the membership card is a toll-free number. And if you get involved in a use of force, what you do is you simply tell the police that you were attacked and that you're the victim, and you used force to defend yourself, and you won't speak without an attorney present. And they say, well, who's your attorney? And you hold up the card and say, call them. And they do, and they speak with the attorney, and you remain silent in that case, after telling the police that you're the victim. That's the whole idea behind this insurance. Legal defense can easily run into $100,000. And without putting a mortgage on your home or draining your life savings or your retirement, many people are, even though they survive legally, don't survive a use of force incident financially. And it's very, very, very important to have some form of coverage. I have the highest level of coverage from Second Call Self-Defense. Marty Hayes runs an organization that's competitive to that, but they don't provide insurance. What they do is they provide, they have over a $4 million fund, and if someone gets involved in a self-defense incident, that their legal network actually will pay, will fund. You hire your own attorney, but they will actually fund your defense. And that's what I was going to talk to Marty about. Unfortunately, he hasn't called in. I don't have his correct cell number, so I can't reach out to him. It was a producerial mistake. I discovered it last night and emailed him, but I was not able to get in touch with him, so I'll probably have to reschedule him. I'm sure it's a mistake of the hand, not of the heart, but in any case, I will reschedule him. In the meantime, if anybody has any questions about the use of force in self-defense, this would be a good hour to talk about it in terms of the law, and it wouldn't be a bad idea to go back over the law in terms of the use of force in self-defense, starting at the beginning point of when is it okay to put hands on another person and when is it not. First of all, there are several circumstances under which you can put hands on another person. It's not self-defense and it's not illegal. Number one is if you're an adult in control of a minor child or an incompetent person, you can use reasonable force to promote discipline. Basically, you can't leave a bruise or draw blood, but if you have to give somebody a spank on the behind or you have to drag them a little bit or give them a push or a shove, you can do that if it's a minor or an incompetent person who's under your control. Next is if somebody's trying to commit suicide and you use enough force to thwart the result of them killing themselves, but they get injured in the process. For instance, they break a bone. Normally, if you break a bone on somebody, it's considered to be aggravated assault. But the law looks at what's known as the doctrine of competing harms, basically that if you're faced with two evils, you do the lesser of the evils. And the law recognizes that, and you're held harmless if you're trying to stop someone from injuring themselves, from killing themselves, and they get injured in the process. You can't beat them. But let's say, for instance, someone is standing on a ledge and you're able to get close enough and talking to them to get a hand on their ankle. And you yank their foot out from underneath them, and in the course of falling inwards rather than outwards off the ledge, they break an elbow or their jaw or they get cut badly or something like that. You are held harmless for the injury to them because it is the lesser of the evils than them jumping to their death, or worse, jumping to their death and landing on somebody and killing someone unintentionally in the act of committing suicide. Another is if you're at the scene of an emergency occurrence. By the way, if you want to look this up, it's Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 13, Part 403. And if you're at an emergency occurrence and someone has been injured, you can use any recognized form of treatment on them. And if they're not conscious to give their consent, you can do what you believe they would have consented to do. That's called implied consent. As long as it's a recognized form of medical treatment, you can do that to them. For instance, many people who carry a gun also carry a tourniquet. I carry my tourniquet of choice is the Rat T. You can look it up on the internet. They're about $17 or $18. It's not the best tourniquet on the market, but it is the simplest and the easiest to use. The Rat T consists of a T-shaped device with a clamp in the top, just sort of a slot in the top, and a bungee cord tied to the bottom. And what you do is you grab the bungee cord and you wrap it three times around whatever limb needs to be tourniqueted, and then you take the end of the bungee cord that's left over after three wraps around and you pull it hard into the T on the top. There's a clevis on the top. There's a slot. And you pull the tourniquet, the top of the tourniquet, into that T and secure it. Then, if you've done that, hopefully you have a pen that writes in heavy ink or a Sanford Sharpie marker. And when you've tied a tourniquet on somebody, you write T on their forehead. You write T and the time in military. And if you do that, somebody who's an emergency responder knows that they're dealing with someone who's been tourniqueted, and they have specific medical protocols for that, and so does an emergency room trying to save the life and the limb. So those are examples. Or, and if it's a child and you believe that the child's parent would have consented to giving that treatment, you have the implied consent to go ahead and do that. A pause for a moment. So those are times when you can put hands on another human being. It's not self-defense and it's also not criminal. Now we look at the authority to use force on another human being in self-defense. Two things must be present in any self-defense claim, in any use of force in self-defense. If you want to follow me, I'm talking about Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 13, which is the Criminal Code, Part 404, which is the use of physical force in self-defense. What it says is, in order to legally justify using force on another human being, the attack against you has to be two things. It has to be both immediate and unlawful. If those two things are not present, you don't have the justification for the use of force. And, of course, you have to be somewhere where you have a right to be. If you're trespassing on someone else's land and they push you off their property, you don't have a right to self-defense because you're not where you have a right to be. But those two things must be present for you to justify using physical force against another human being, that it has to be immediate and that it has to be unlawful. There are three reasons why you cannot use physical force against another person. Number one, if you're involved in an argument with the other person and you escalate that argument and then it results in a use of force. For instance, you're in a social circumstance somewhere and someone bangs into you and you look at them and you realize they've done it deliberately. They're doing it to get a rise out of you or to impress someone they're with or as part of a gang ritual. Whatever it is, they deliberately shove you, push you, or knock into you. There's a natural tendency, at least with human males, once you hit about 40, to believe you own whatever ground you're standing on. It's not true, but it's just human nature. And so you have a tendency, some of us do, have a right to be, or have a tendency to become combative when someone bangs into us. You got to, if you're going to maintain self-defense, you got to resist that urge. Because if they use some horrible insult on you and you respond in kind and it escalates into a fight and then there's pushing and shoving and then a weapon comes out, you've blown the justification for the use of physical force, unless you withdrew and you clearly communicated to the other person in the altercation you didn't want to be part of a fight. One of the ways you can do that, put both hands in front of you with your palms out, bring your arms all the way back to your chest as close as nature allows, depending on your architecture. Bring your hands all the way back with your fingertips proximal to your jawline and both hands facing outwards, showing that you don't have a weapon in your hand and also telling the other person, get away from me. And the reason you have your hands there is if somebody swings something at you, you're not blocking your peripheral vision, you can block it. And number two is, if they do incur into your personal space, you can actually, with your hands coiled all the way back against your chest, you can step forwards and push as hard as you can, push them away from you and then back away from them. You'll create distance that you need, either for time to get a hold of some tool of self-defense or give yourself space in order to get away from the assailant. Either way, you'll have clearly communicated to the other person that you don't want to be part of a fight, and therefore maintained, even if there was some arguing, maintained your ability to claim self-defense later. But if you bait somebody into a fight in order to get them to attack you so that you can use self-defense as an excuse, you do not have a claim of self-defense. You're basically what they call a mutual combatant. And if you become a mutual combatant, you can't claim that you're engaged in self-defense. You don't have to back up, but you cannot encourage someone into a fight so that you can defend yourself. And we'll cover more about the laws on the use of force and self-defense in a little while.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the swap shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we've resurrected Marty Hayes. And the problem I discovered, I just took a hunch. I said, I think he's in the Northeast. I had written your phone number down. It should start with 360. I had 350, and that's what caused this. My fault, not yours. Marty, it's a pleasure. Well, of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Are we on the air?
We are live on the air right now, this very minute. We are on the radio.
Hello, everyone from Arizona and Portland.
Okay, your signal's not real strong. If you're moving, try and stop. If you're not moving, maybe move a few feet. But in any case, we're not reading you 5x5 here. Anyway, I had a number of things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I wanted to talk basically about the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. On foundation, what is the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network?
The concept behind it is that if one of our members is involved in a self-defense incident and they need legal assistance, then we will supply financial assistance, basically, so they can hire an attorney and not have to worry about costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And why is some type of legal coverage important, even if you do have money?
Well, it's a lot less important to have money. But legal fees for an unmeritorious prosecution, in other words, if you're living in a state that has, or an attorney general or a county that has a liberal prosecuting attorney, and they don't like guns, and they want to prosecute you, then they can run up the fees to $100,000,
$300,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see examples of that with what's happened with former President Trump about the level of vitriol that the legal system engages in if they don't like you.
Right.
Yeah,
it's pretty pathetic, actually.
It kind of is. It's surprising to me that that's allowed by the courts. You know, in fact, it's engaged in by the courts. It's legal warfare. I guess the term for it is lawfare. I don't know that that's an accurate term. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. You're a lawyer. I'm not. So, although you came to the law late in life, right?
Well, let's correct that. I'm not actually a lawyer. I just have the degree.
Oh,
I can take the bar if I want, but as I was going through law school late in life, I hit upon the idea of starting the network instead of take on the water when I'm done. And so I went ahead and started the network to help out thousands of people instead of just a few.
That's interesting. So you have a law degree, but you're not a lawyer.
Right.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I guess I've just, as they say, done discovery on the witness stand, something I didn't know. Okay, so some models of legal defense are insurance-based. I know yours is not. Explain to us, take a few minutes, if you would, and explain the difference.
Well, the problem with insurance is twofold. One is you don't get to make the ultimate decisions. You typically don't get to hire your attorney. You don't get to decide whether or not a plea bargain is going to float. And a lot of times that's up for the, that's up to the attorney. And of course you actually.
Your signal is fading away.
Okay. I'll try to stand still right here.
Yeah, I'm barely able to hear you. I said something about standing still, Marty.
Okay. Stuff for me. What I can do is we could take a 10-minute break and I can call you back where I have a good signal.
That's fine. Go ahead and do that. Call me back on the number I dialed you on, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, I'll see you in a little while. I'm going to continue on with what I was saying before until Marty calls me back. And so in order to use physical force in self-defense, you have to have the threat against you has to be immediate and unlawful. Immediate means exactly that, immediate. It can't be a future or a verbal threat. And unlawful means what the other person's doing has to be unlawful and what you're doing isn't. Under those circumstances, you can do whatever a reasonable person believes is immediately necessary to preserve life or limb. And we're talking physical force, not deadly force yet. And there's three circumstances under which you cannot use physical force. Number one is if you've escalated an argument with another person and basically baited them into the fight. Number two is if the threat against you is a future or verbal threat alone. No matter how insulting, no matter how vile, no matter what somebody says, what fighting words someone uses, it does not excuse the use of force to address them. If someone insults your wife, you can't punch them. It's not legal. It's also not moral because words are not equivalent to acts. And that's the principle the law is based on. And the third thing that's not legal in Arizona is you cannot use physical force to resist an arrest that you know or should know is being made by a police officer or someone helping the police officer, unless the officer uses so much force that they become the perpetrator. Now, this is not a radio program on how to get into a fight with a police officer. Don't do that. Even if the arrest is unlawful, unless the attempt of process is murder, don't resist law enforcement. Do not. Fight it out in court later. On the street, you're highly unlikely to win. And even if you win on the street, you're going to lose in court, and you're going to lose very, very badly. Do not use force. Do not raise a hand to anybody in government. And do we have you now, Marty? Are you there? Oops. I'm sorry. You are there now? Say again. Barely hear you. Yeah, not that great. Signal's not very strong. Are you there? Marty, if you're talking to me, I can't hear you. Dead air's not great for radio. Try again, Marty. Hang up and try back. I appreciate your effort. Yeah, there we go. All right, we'll try one more time. All right, so even if the arrest is unlawful, it's a Class 6 felony in Arizona to resist arrest. Don't do that. Here's what you can do. First of all, manage the contact. Do not take an aggressive posture when you're talking to a police officer. Normally for self-defense, you want your feet straight underneath you, you want both feet pointed towards the threat, and you want your hands in a defensive posture. When it comes to talking to cops, be a little off balance. Make your stand a little bit wider than shoulder width apart. If possible, if you got something behind you you can lean on, like a car fender, lean backwards against it. And then take your hands and simply fold them together and put them over your solar plexus, touching your own chest. This is a posture that a police officer can observe you in and say, and without having to think about it too much, say, this person is not in a position to attack me. This is how you de-escalate. Now, if you have one of those rare circumstances where you believe the officer is not an honest player and is looking for an excuse to hurt you, that's very, very rare, especially in Tucson. The Tucson cops do not have that reputation, okay? But if you believe the officer is spoiling for a fight, just simply do this. Cross your legs and sit. It's almost impossible to be accused of trying to attack them from the lotus position. It just doesn't happen. What are they going to accuse you of? Trying to bite them in the groin? I mean, for goodness sakes. And if you're in a serious circumstance where the cops are yelling and they got guns out, for goodness sakes, try and obey what they're saying. But if you can't figure that out, or if there's multiple cops giving you multiple orders, go to the ground and spread your arms. Spread yourself out. It's hard to say that you're attacking them from that position. And Marty, are you back?
Okay, I know this is good.
It is good. You're right. So we were talking about, I was just filling in between and talking about the justification for the use of force and physical force, and I was going to get to deadly force a little bit later, but I'm going to pause that and resume our conversation. Some models of legal defense are insurance-based, and yours is not. You were saying the problem with an insurance-based policy is that they pick the lawyer and that you can't just take a plea bargain if you believe it's in your interest, right? Is that what happens?
No, actually, a lot of times they will want you to take a plea bargain as opposed to take the thing to trial, because it costs a whole lot more money out of the insurance company's pocket to pay for a trial as it does to have you take a plea bargain. Mm-hmm. In other words, you don't have complete control over your legal defense.
Should you have complete control if the lawyer is more experienced about self-defense than you are?
Well, I want the ultimate ability. I want the ability to make the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to pick the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I want the ability to fire the lawyer and pick a new one.
Mm-hmm.
If the one isn't doing me justice, I don't think.
Okay.
And the other problem is a lot of these insurance companies have a clause in their contract that says, if you're found guilty, then we have the right to come back at you for all the money we spent in your defense.
Hmm.
It's called a recoupment clause. And in order to get licensed or approved by the local insurance commissioner, then they have to include that in their contract with you. They don't tell you about it up front. Yeah, they wouldn't want to do that.
Hmm.
They'll hide it in the fine print, and they'll just sell you on, we'll cover everything, we got your back, blah, blah, blah.
Hmm. So your concept is you fund people to hire their own attorney rather than either providing attorneys or being the attorney that defends them. There's other organizations that have different models, and we're at the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and take the bottom of the hour break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish that topic of the conversation when we return. We're on with Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. You can find them online at ALCDN.org, or what is the web address?
ArmedCitizensNetwork.org.
ArmedCitizensNetwork.org. Back after this.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
He tried to pull a knife on me. I pulled my .45. All cops did was take my gun and drag me off to jail. No cops were there to help me live. But now I'm out on bail. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. I'd rather live than die. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. Let some other mama cry. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
And talking about the topic of being tried by 12 rather than carried by 6, with us is Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network. Marty, I get this feeling that most people who carry a gun for self-defense do not understand the way the legal system works, and that when the cops arrive, that if you're the guy with a gun and the one on the ground is the one with the holes, they're naturally going to assign the category to you of perpetrator and the one on the ground is victim. And if you pull out your CCW permit and go, "Don't worry, officer, I'm the good guy," the next four words you're going to hear are, "You are under arrest." And I don't think that most people, even the people who are knowledgeable gun people, understand the way that system works.
Well, the law is set up to make it a crime to intentionally kill another person. Even if it's in self-defense, you've still committed the elements of the act of murder. Now, you get to plead self-defense as a justification for you having committed the act of murder. And if the system, either the police, the prosecutor, the judge, or the jury, believe you, then they won't prosecute. Mm-hmm. And if they don't believe you, or if they have no reason to believe you, then they'll prosecute for the murder because they know you killed that guy.
Mm-hmm. But in Arizona, at least, I don't know how it is in the Northwest, in the high Northwest where you are, but at least in Arizona, you're entitled to the presumption of reasonableness for self-defense. And I know that's in the law because I helped get it passed in 2006. And it's called the presumption of reasonableness in the use of force. And if the reason that you used force is pursuant to 5 Arizona laws on physical force, deadly force, defense of a third person, defense of premises, defense of personal property, or defense of display, you're entitled to the presumption that what you did is reasonable if it was pursuant to those laws. Is that the case where you live?
No. No, there's no presumption of reasonableness here. We follow, I believe it was Castro, the case of State versus Castro, where they make allowances that if there is a reasonable evidence of self-defense, then the state must prove that you did not act in self-defense.
Mm-hmm. The burden of proof is on the state.
Yeah, to prove that you did not act in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
How that would work would be if you shot someone in self-defense and the police show up and you say, "I'm not talking to you, I want my lawyer,"
mm-hmm.
and you never uttered a word after that, then A, they know that they can arrest and prosecute you for murder,
mm-hmm.
and unless you get up on the stand and you testify, or there are witnesses, then you will likely be convicted of murder.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to bring forward some evidence, some reasonable evidence, that it was self-defense. And typically mm-hmm. that is you testifying in court or at the grand jury.
What about beforehand at the scene where, you know, you look at what Moss says about, "I'm the victim, he's the perpetrator"?
Yeah, and that's where we'd like to shut it down. We've had several of our people get into shootings,
mm-hmm.
and they have followed our advice, and they were not prosecuted because they told the investigating officers what was occurring that made them have to shoot in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, we had one case where our member shot in defense of another person,
mm-hmm.
and when the cop showed up, he didn't say anything. Well, he went to jail. And we got him an attorney lined up, and within a week, the attorney was sitting down with the prosecutor and the detective and the member. And at that point, then, the member and the defense attorney explained what actually happened. And they dropped the charges. The detective says, "If I would have known that at the time, I would not have arrested you." Mm-hmm. Well, he got a week's vacation in the jail. But, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
You've got to proffer some evidence of your innocence or you're going to be arrested.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is if you don't tell the police what category that you're in, they're going to assign one to you and you're not going to like the assignment. I know.
That's right.
The other thing I tell people all the time is that if they've had to threaten the use of force, the next thing you better do is call 911 and get a case number. Because if you're not the victim, then you get called the perpetrator if the other person complains. And many people do not understand this. I get referrals to me based on my work with the Arizona Citizens Defense League of people who call me up who were the victim and they didn't call and they get charged with aggravated assault.
Yeah, because you know assault is basically one step lower than pulling the trigger.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same type of defense. You got to defend it the same way.
Yep. Some folks are really spicy about this topic. There's a lot of controversy going on right now, at least on YouTube, around Mark Victor and his disagreement with some of the insurance-based plans, his snit with you. I don't say you have a snit with him. He had a snit with you. What do you care to shed any light on that?
Well, it's my opinion that he is fabricating consciousness streams or streams of consciousness to get people to say, I don't want to be a member of that company. I'll go ahead and go with the Attorneys for Freedom or Attorneys on Retainer. And so it's his way of marketing. I think it's highly suspect, but that's what he's doing, you know.
He's certainly raising a stir. He sure has Tim Schmidt's feathers flustered.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Tim didn't help himself out when he countered on YouTube that he believed that Kayla Giles had committed first degree murder. Yeah, you know,
and I'm not familiar with the Kayla Giles case. Did she commit first degree murder?
Not in my opinion.
Uh huh. What did she do?
Yeah, that's the one that was the one in Louisiana where they paid USCCA paid $50,000 to get her attorney, and then the USCCA's insurance company dropped any additional assistance.
Ooh, that's not good.
And she was stuck trying to defend it with another attorney, and she didn't have the money, and the case went downhill from there, and she was convicted. And I've looked at enough evidence to believe that there's a reasonable case of self-defense there.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if she would have been a member of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, we would have backed it.
Got it. All right, we have a caller coming in. Caller, your first name, please.
Sean.
Hi, Sean. You're on the radio with Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Go ahead.
Hey, Marty. Hi, Charles. How are you doing today?
Good.
One of the things you say that, well, first, when you bring up Mark, obviously I'm in. I mean, I think Mark's one of the most brilliant attorneys on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had him on my show. I think he's a good guy. But you say be the victim. Okay, here's one of the things we discuss a lot at the company I work at. Be the victim. Go back to Black's Law. I think it's 1235 or 1285. Black's Law. You know Black's Law, right?
We're aware of what you're talking about.
We? You're speaking for other people now?
Marty and I, yes, I'm speaking for two people. Marty and I, we're both aware of what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's pretty tough to get through law school without having a Black's Law dictionary.
Yeah. Like I said, we understand. We understand what you're talking about.
Okay.
I own the third edition of Black's Law Unabridged. Go ahead.
Okay. So if you think about it, what we deal with in business right now, when we are confronted by the state, and I talk any level, city, county, state, federal, the state becomes their own victim. If you go back to Black's Law, you will read in there, no victim, no crime, right, Mr. Attorney?
He's not an attorney. There are no attorneys on the line here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were an attorney. I apologize. But
I have a law degree is all.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good thing. Being attorney is actually a problem. But don't you, would you guys agree with me, no victim, no crime? Have we turned the law on its face,
Sean,
and it's not through legislation,
Sean, what's
through
this
case
got,
law.
Sean, what has this got to do with the discussion on the table about how you defend yourself if you're accused of a crime, if you're accused of using force wrongfully in self-defense? I don't understand.
Well, of course you don't understand, but you brought it up to call and be the victim.
No. I didn't say, no, Sean, no, you didn't hear me. I said you got
let me intervene here.
Yeah, please do, Marty. Go ahead.
When the self-defender calls the police, they're not calling the police to report that they're the victim. They're calling the police to report a crime has been committed and that you're going to be a good witness and tell the police what the heck happened so they can investigate the incident properly.
Sean, did that answer?
That would be absolutely correct. You're not a victim. You're a witness.
Okay.
To an injury to another person,
or to
property,
or to an injury to yourself, which would make you the victim. Okay, Sean, where are we going with this? What's the question for Marty?
No, I think we turned the law on its face, and
right.
and I'm just using the state as an example.
Right, Sean, but
the state is now the plaintiff.
I got it. But
in many of the things about self-defense, the state will become the plaintiff. When you defend yourself in my – I don't care about lawfully.
Sean,
I care about right and wrong.
Black's Law Dictionary –
does that make
sense or no? I have no idea what you're talking about. Sean, call another day. This is fine. It has nothing to do with it. It's not germane to the topic. Marty, we're coming up on three-quarters of the hour mark. I got to take another break, but I want to talk about self-defense education, which is one of the things that you do, and why it's so important in the next segment, because I really think people do not fully grasp what the laws are on the use of force, and it's so important that they do know. And we'll be right back talking about that with Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network. Again, the web address is
armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Okay, back after this. Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
I have a Chevy 283 with a Rochester 4-barrel carburetor.
I had a typo in there. I made it a 293. Boarded out 10 over, right on the radio.
Do that a couple more times for me.
We'll turn it into a 302 for you, nothing flat.
Five,
swap shop, two, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl! Stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, JPFO.org.
She was like 17, and she looked pretty mean, and the way she shot was way beyond compare. Oh, she wouldn't carry another gun with bad guys standing there. But she walked the night, but she ran up her sight. Her treachery cards were gleaming back at her. Oh, she wouldn't carry another gun with bad guys standing there.
And welcome back. We're with Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. A little bit of the Cartridge Family Band there. And she wouldn't carry another. I like that her Trijicons were glowing back at her. I know Moss likes Meprolite, not Trijicon, right?
I do not know that.
Well, I think I heard him. I think they used to be one of his sponsors. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, you've had an association with him for a long time, have you not?
Yeah, in fact, that's where I was when you called. I was on the range with him.
10 o'clock.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I got to go.
Yeah. So how did you first team up with Masada U?
I was working at an indoor gun range in 1990, and one of our indoor gun range patrons wanted me to see if he'd come out and teach a class. So I called him up, and he said, sure. And he came out and taught a class, and that's how I got hooked up with them. And I've been teaching with them ever since 1990.
Mm. I think that's where you and I first met, was when he was teaching a class in Phoenix.
Could be.
Yep, could very well be. So how do you educate? How do you teach people how to behave in the event they've threatened or used physical force, or especially deadly force?
Well, the topic of education comes in really early. The armed citizen needs to understand that education is the key to their winning in court. A jury is going to decide whether or not they acted reasonable under the circumstances. If those circumstances include a whole lot of high-level education and training in the use of deadly force and self-defense, and they can explain to the jury what the training consisted of and how they simply followed their training, then they shouldn't have a problem. In fact, they should not even be prosecuted, because that information will get to the prosecutor ahead of time. It's no different than police officers who rely upon their training and education to justify their actions on the street.
How much of the training or the details about the law actually gets into the system if it does come to a trial? How much can you actually tell the jury about what the law is, or will the judge stop that from happening?
Well, it's not about what the law is. That is the judge's province. What you can do is to train, is to introduce into court what you knew about the actions of the deceased, and why you reasonably perceived that your life was in danger, and why you used deadly force to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comes out of court.
Do the notes of your training, if you preserve them with the dates on them and maybe even seal them in an envelope and mail them to yourself, can that be introduced as evidence in a court?
Probably.
And is it a good idea?
I think it is. It's Mass has been teaching that ever since I've known him. And we've got our educational package that we send out to people. And we tell people, okay, we used to do it on DVDs, but now it's done on a thumb drive, and nobody has a DVD player anymore.
Right.
But, we want people to take notes, write it down, and document that you've seen this material.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you need to explain it to the jury, or better yet, we can show the training material to the jury, then that's certainly possible to do.
If the training material includes notes on what the law actually is, will a judge have a heart attack?
They won't really talk about what the law actually is. Every state is different, all the different statutes. We don't get into that. We get into basically decision-making, a lot about what to do after an incident, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorite cases? Well, you mentioned one that went sour, that USCCA, that Tim Schmidt kind of goofed himself up with. But do you have any favorite cases that illustrate some of the things you do for people?
Absolutely. On our website is the case of Larry Hickey.
Oh, yeah, in Tucson.
Tucson gun owner who ended up using force against three people who were attacking him in front of his house.
Mm-hmm.
That case is very well detailed on our website under the title Three-Headed Monster, because there are three people who are attacking him.
You know, and that should never have been prosecuted.
I worked on that case as an expert, and I was very involved in it. Yeah. Two hung juries, and the judge finally said, nah, we're not going to pursue this again.
Yeah, dismissed with prejudice.
Justifiable.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that case should never have even gone to trial once. I know Larry. I know him pretty well. And a decent human being. Just a nice guy.
Well, and that's a perfect example of when you get a liberal anti-gun district attorney who wants to prosecute armed citizens. Yeah, and they took Larry to task on it.
Yeah, it cost them over $110,000.
I think that was the bail.
Yeah.
He had to get out on bail.
Right, yeah. That was just a mess. That was a royal mess.
Larry was not a member of the network at the time, but he was a good friend of one of our members who called me and says, you need to get involved in this. And so I did. And, you know,
and good for
it
you.
It was one of the better cases that we were able to prove self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if he's still with the railroad?
I'm sure he is, yeah.
Yeah, he is. I knew him from the railroad, and I also knew him from the gun community because I used to work there too. I was a crew bus driver, and that's where I really got to talking to Larry, and he told me a lot about what he did. Or what happened. What a mess.
Mm-hmm.
That was under the previous county attorney. The one now is a lot, was orders of magnitude worse, but she doesn't really want to prosecute anybody for anything. So it's a Soros-funded prosecutor, and, you know, I just kind of lazy-faire with her. So anyway, there's somebody running against her who's a Democrat who's to the right of her. It's kind of strange.
I guess no Republicans get elected in Pima County.
It's questionable. There's one running, but, you know, people just are not familiar with the species here in terms of the central core of the city and the registration. It's the central part of the city is probably 75% D, and it's really hard to get somebody in that core anywhere near the university. That's got, you know, any kind of conservative values. Oh, is there any, I have to ask you, I know this is a show about legal stuff, but do you have a favorite thing you carry for self-defense?
I carry either a Nighthawk Custom 1911 Combat Commander in 10mm.
Ooh.
Or a Smith & Wesson Model 13 357 revolver.
Hmm. Got it. Well, that's pretty neat stuff. I know the Nighthawk is that's an expensive piece of equipment there.
Yeah, well, that's when you get old.
You deserve it. Yeah, you deserve it.
Okay. Afford some of those things.
Any second, we're going to be in the theme music here, so I'm going to need to let you go. But go ahead and give that website one last time, if you would.
www.armedcitizensnetwork.org. Thank you very much for having me on board.
My pleasure. It's good to have you on. All right. Enjoy.
Okay. Take care.
Mm-hmm. I want to encourage you to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Protect us by thy might, great God.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.